WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When I was talking with Laura Hillenbrand about writing Seabiscuit while suffering with chronic fatigue syndrome, I was thinking about what the experience was like for her editor. So we invited her editor, Jonathan Karp, to talk with us. Seabiscuit isn't his first book that was made into a film. He edited The Orchid Thief, which was a longtime nonfiction bestseller and inspired the film adaptation. In Karp's 14 years at Random House, he's also edited books by Poe Bronson, Christopher Buckley, Dale Bumpers, David Frum, Gary Hart, Howard Kurtz, John McCain, Dick Morris, Kenneth Pollack, Mario Puzo, Paul Wellstone, and Paul Watkins. Well, talking to Laura and reading her New Yorker piece, I couldn't help but wonder, why would an editor take a chance on an author who was so sick and could rarely leave her bed? Did you have a lot of reservations about signing the book, Seabiscuit?
Well, I guess my first comment would be to quote the movie and just say you don't throw someone out just because they're beat up a little bit. But the fuller answer is that the proposal that we received from Laura's agent, a very dynamic and well-regarded literary agent named Tina Bennett, was so superb that we just had faith in Laura's ability to write the book. We knew that she had chronic fatigue syndrome, but to be honest, I really didn't have a very good idea of just how serious the illness was. And my feeling was if she'd been able to write about horse racing for 10 years and win awards, which she had been able to do, she'd be able to write the book. So I didn't really overthink it.
How did you find out how serious it really was?
Over time, I went to visit her at her house. We had a great conversation. We talked about the editing, and she was still writing the book at that point. And I called her the next day, and I said, you know, Laura, I would never know you were sick. And she said, well, I was seeing two of you during the whole time. I really didn't realize how serious it was.
Now, what impressed you about the early portions of Seabiscuit that you were shown by Laura Hillenbrand's agent?
Well, I think that the proposal had the contours of a great story. And I keep thinking of what Bernard Malamud said about what really good fiction writing is about. He said it was story, story, story. And Seabiscuit is architecturally a perfect story. It has protagonists overcoming adversity in a very unexpected way, and they keep surprising you with their ability to surmount the odds. So I had faith that the story, if it were told well, would have an elemental power to it. Then Laura herself took it leaps further by writing it with a great deal of lyricism and intensity and passion.
Now, she says that you came up with the beginning of the book as she was having a hard time figuring out what the beginning should be. How did you come up with it?
Well, the truth of it is, I first got interested in the book because I was having lunch with Laura's agent, Tina Bennett, and Tina mentioned the Seabiscuit proposal to me. And I said, you know, I'm not really interested in horses or horse racing. And Tina said, well, you know, this was no ordinary horse. In 1938, more was written about this horse than FDR or Mussolini or Hitler. And that's actually in the book. And that's how the book now begins, because that was what got me interested in it. And then I figured if I was interested in that fact, then other readers would be as well.
When you signed Seabiscuit, when you signed the book, did you think this is going to be a big book, this is a big bestseller, or did you think more this will be more like the prestige book, it's a very literary nonfiction book, it's not going to sell a lot, but I'll be proud to have edited it, and the company will be proud to have published it?
When I signed the book up, all I knew was that it was a really good story with the potential to reach a large audience by a writer whose talent intrigued me. When Laura went away to write the book, I still didn't know. When we were meeting to discuss the book, I still didn't know. All I could really discern was that she really cared about this story a great deal. I remember her calling me with excitement, having found out some details about the Tijuana whorehouse that the jockeys visited, and the scrapbooks that the Howard family had let her borrow. And I knew that she really had a feeling for this subject. It seems to me that the key to success with any book is to have an author who's obsessed and who has the focus to see it through and then has the talent to deliver on it. And Laura had all of that. I think that it's funny, you asked me about how the chronic fatigue syndrome contributed to the book. And in a way, I think that it gave her a focus that perhaps some other authors never really achieve in their writing, because she was basically at home all the time with this book as the chief focus of her life. I think that she wrote it better.
Nonfiction writing has an obligation to accurately reflect the truth. Often in magazines, certainly at the top magazines, there are fact-checking departments that check every fact in a nonfiction magazine article and make sure that it's accurate. I think it's much more difficult for book publishing companies to fact-check each fact in a book. I mean, I don't think book publishing companies do that. What do you consider your responsibilities as the editor of a nonfiction book to be able to vouch for the accuracy of the history and the facts within it?
Well, the publisher is going on faith when a book is signed up. And actually, there's a clause in the contract, a warranty clause, in which the author guarantees that the work will be accurate. So really, the most important decision I make as an editor is believing that the writer is good enough to get it right. And I just had a feeling that Laura would get it right. So that was my biggest and most important decision. Beyond that, as the first reader of the book, what you do is you just try to apply as much skepticism as you can. I remember that one of the concerns I had when I was reading the book was whether there was any kind of anthropomorphism going on, whether she was attributing too much intelligence or charm to Seabiscuit. And I was querying that very specifically, and in every instance, Laura backed it up and supported it and said, actually, Seabiscuit really was that intelligent, and Seabiscuit really was that competitive. She actually wrote about how a lot of horses are competitive that way, that when they lose their riders during races, they almost always try to win anyway. And that's the kind of thing that I would never have known, since I've never been to the track. But Laura was able to back up.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Sure.
And congratulations on the success of Seabiscuit.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Jonathan Karp edited the bestseller Seabiscuit.